I prepared a Kabbalistic interpretation of the burning bush, so I wouldn't have to talk about the fact that we just read that there's a new king of Egypt being inaugurated, and the women are marching against him and defying his right to make decrees. And I would love to just ignore that and go back to Kabbalah. But it seems like I think God would be pretty angry at me for ignoring a synchronicity that is happening. So let's do three basic traditional teachings. If I had 20 minutes with you to do Rashi's on this parsha, this is what you'd have to know. You always start with the opening line. So if you look at the opening line, these are the names of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt with Jacob. There's Reuben and Shimon and Levi and Yehuda and Issachar, and it goes on and on. And the question is, why would you start the book of Shemot of names with names? Why would you start with names? And traditional teaching is because this is exactly what Pharaoh refused to acknowledge is individuals. What he said is that all Hebrews are bad. Kill the Hebrews. And he refused to acknowledge them as looking at them as individuals rather than as a collective group. His power was in treating them as a collective group and not as individuals. The second Rashi, that's the famous Rashi on Shemot. Then you go on a little more, and the Rashi would be, as you all probably know it by now, that when it says the new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph, in this verse 8, is that there's no way not to know Joseph. He ran Egypt for his lifetime. So that there's nothing to compare it to in America. We haven't had a president who ruled for, 30 years. But everyone knew Joseph. He was known as Joseph. He ran the country for 30 years. And so the Rashi, as well as the rabbis, say that the word know should be translated as acknowledge, which has the word know in it. So the Hebrew is not the sense of he'd never heard of Joseph, he didn't know Joseph, or he didn't know Joseph well. The answer is, of course, he knew Joseph. Translated as a new king arose over Egypt who did not acknowledge Joseph's accomplishments. Again, it's a continuation of the theme that he wanted to treat the Israelites, the Hebrews, as a group, and that required him not to acknowledge the contributions toward the country of any individuals within the group. And especially, the parade example is the lead Jew, who basically saved the country from famine, but refused to acknowledge his contribution to Egypt. And then he says, you know what? When our enemies fight against us, I bet these Jews are going to join with them, and therefore we must oppress them and enslave them. Is there any justification for thinking that the Jews, the Israeli Hebrews, would join with the enemies of Egypt? Well, on the one hand, there's no justification for it in the sense that there's no indication that the Hebrews are anything but extremely grateful to be in Egypt. Right? They were saved from famine. Joseph brought them there. They have this symbiotic relationship where they tend the herds and the Egyptians do the agriculture, something like that. And there's nothing to say anything but that they are, in a way, the proudest Egyptians there because they're so grateful to be there and they have a proud history and a role. There's nothing to suggest that they are traitors or that they wish Egypt poorly. But Is there any possibility that they could be of help to foreigners wanting to invade Syria, the Mesopotamians coming down to invade Egypt? Well, yeah. I mean, they know the terrain. They could be of help if they wanted to be of help. They could be. They're in Goshen, which is basically on the border of Egypt and Sinai. If they wanted to help, they could. They have those tools. They know the terrain. They could help. They're in a good position to help enemies. There's no indication that they would have any interest in doing so because they seem to be pretty patriotic. And so one of the things that happens there is that the rabbis say, so Pharaoh says, they're going to join with our enemies, but there's no indication that they want to join with their enemies, although they would be in a good position to do so if they wanted to, and that's enough for the Egyptians to believe them. And finally, there's a very strange thing that happens that Rafi read from the Torah, which is we're just on chapter one. You finish chapter one with Pharaoh wants to kill the, you know, wants the midwives to kill the boys, the Hebrew boys. The midwives say no. Then he commands the people. Now everyone's got to kill the boys, but he says a very strange thing. And because the midwives feared God, God established households for them. And then Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, he's so frustrated, he's like, they won't kill the boys, those Hebrew boys. He says, every boy that is born you shall throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. So what's really weird about that, that line? He's so frustrated, that Pharaoh, he's like, kill all the boys. What does he forget in that decree? He forgot to say, kill all the Hebrew boys. He said, kill all the boys, right? So one of the obvious things that everyone point out is that that's kind of a strange thing, that he's so angry at the midwives that he says, kill all the boys. And he forgets to say, kill all the Jewish boys. Now, of course, we can understand that it was understood that he meant kill all the Hebrew boys, but they say there's a secret hidden message in that. It is a hint of what? It is a hint of what is to come through Pharaoh's own action, which is the 10th plague, the death of the firstborn of the Egyptians. In other words, Pharaoh is being so careless, and he so wants to get those Hebrews, he's going to treat them like a collective, he's going to blame everything on them, he has very little justification, that in his anger he says, kill all the boys. And he forgets to say, kill all the Hebrew boys, and in the end, his wish is granted. Because God does kill the boys of the Egyptians. He's careless in what he wishes for, and it's going to come true. And so that carelessness is reflected in the fact that ultimately, this whole campaign against the Israelites does ultimately destroy Egypt. Does Egypt eventually get defeated by its enemies that come from the north, from Mesopotamia? It does. A couple of hundred years later, Egypt is so weakened by all of this that, and we read it in the prophets, that their biggest enemies are not the Hebrews. Who are their biggest enemies? The Babylonians, the Assyrians. And they come down and they do kick Egypt's butt, right? Because Pharaoh was spending all his time trying to kill the Hebrews, weaken the country, and they do become vulnerable to their enemies. So Pharaoh's prophecy comes true, just not in the way he said, which is that the Hebrews don't help the eventual Syrians. In fact, they're victims, as we know from Jeremiah and Jeremiah in particular and others. They become victims themselves. So with these put together, I would say about this. Just because someone votes for a president doesn't mean they agree with everything that president says, right? So I have voted since I ever could, and I voted for many people, and many of their policies and things they say, I disagree with. So I just want to say that I hope that anytime we talk about politics, and I don't like to talk about politics very, very much, especially on Shabbos, but I just want to say that before we get to us and them, like, it just because you agree with a president on some things, or you want to put your faith in a particular president, doesn't mean you agree with everything they say, and that's neither true for Democrats, and it's neither true for Republicans, and it's not true for independents. So that it's perfectly fine to say, instead of making it, is Donald Trump an evil person? Is Barack Obama hate America? I don't find any of that very helpful, because I find those, like, I mean, I wasn't, you know, Barack Obama wasn't king. I mean, I don't know, like, I don't know how you evaluate these things, and I don't think they're helpful. But if we talk about particular policies or particular things, I think the Torah has a hint of something that we should pay attention to right in the parasha, and as the women are marching to try to make a statement about human rights, which is this, which is that just on just one single issue, and I don't think this is too controversial, immigrants to this country, especially immigrants who speak Arabic, could they help our enemies against us? Like, could the Hebrews help Egypt's enemies? Yeah, they could. They're in a really good position to do that. They speak Arabic. They have relatives back home. They're in a great position to undermine this country and help our enemies against us. Absolutely. Just like the Hebrews, he's got a point. They're right there on the border of Sinai. They come from the area up by Syria. Our people did come from Laban's area, which is right on the hills outside, the Arameans, right on the hills outside of Babylonia and Assyria. So he's like, they speak those languages? They got relatives back there? Absolutely they could help our enemies. That's a fact on the ground. Then the Torah, what Rashi and others point out is, why would they? Right? Which are they? And so I think of the immigrants today, I mean, I'm not going to say anything too surprising, which is that when I hear the interviews with them, they're like the most pro-American people I've ever met in my life. They're like, why do you think we fled the countries? We hate ISIS. We hate radical Islam. We hate all of it. We can't stand it. We love America. Some of them have these terrible lives where they work, you know, 14, 16 hours a day driving taxis and things like that. And they're just like, I love this country. I kiss the ground all the time. My mother's an immigrant. Granted, she's not an Islamic immigrant. But, you know, my mother's British. She loves America more than any of us. I mean, like, you know, she's so grateful for this country. I mean, we ought to understand that immigrants do generally like America more than the rest of us. I mean, they're more grateful for it. Just like the Israelites, the Hebrews were more grateful. They got saved. Their lives were saved, you know? And they didn't have the best lives. They weren't the rich Egyptians, but they were really, really grateful. I think of 1924. And I think of when the Congress of the United States passed the Immigration Bill of 1924, which, and I have the quotation in my office if you want it, which the bill states that the immigration of Jews to America must stop. Because Jews, you can just look, I'll say what it says. It says that Jews are retarded, and they're incapable of learning, and they will never be able to be real Americans. The subtext is, you can just look at them get off those boats, and they're speaking their weird language, and they never really understand what we're about. And the immigration was halted. And of course, what happens after 1924? The 1930s, Hitler comes to power, people get on boats to escape, and are they led into America? No. The boats are turned away, they go to Cuba, they're turned away, they end up back in Germany where people are put in concentration camps and then exterminated, murdered. And you're like, well, they weren't turned away because, they didn't turn away because the boat didn't have the right paperwork to get into the harbor. They were turned away because of the Immigration Act of 1924. Even after the Holocaust, even after Hitler had been defeated, one of the reasons that Jews went to Palestine or Israel instead of America was that law was still in effect, right? That Jews are European Jews are incapable of becoming real Americans because they're slow of mind, and if you just look at them, they're incapable of learning our language, understanding our values. When I can't imagine who would be a more grateful American than Jews coming out of concentration camps, looking for a country in which their human rights are upheld. So, are there real dangers? Sure. But I think that if you look at the individuals rather than at the group, you know, you look at that Ellis Island, you look at that, it's so easy. I can see them right now. You know, they're not Native Americans. What am I talking about? The most recent immigrants, but, you know, the people who have been here since the 1840s or something, or 1830s. Looking at that boat's coming into the harbor at Ellis Island and saying, those aren't Americans. They're talking that funny Yiddish stuff, and then they move on to the Lower East Side and they still don't assimilate and they still don't understand anything. They don't even know the rules of baseball and they play it wrong and they play the stickball wrong. And and then they're bringing down my kids' education because they can't even speak English in the classrooms. And we all know what has happened. One generation later, all the kids speak English. They're indistinguishable from the other kids, but I can see seeing that boat and say, we gotta send those boats back. But if you looked at the individuals on the boats, you'd see future professors, you see grandparents with the right values who are gonna raise their kids and grandkids to love education, to found companies, to make discoveries, to build up this country, to become doctors, and you know, the Jewish doctors and the Jewish accountants that we're gonna build up and make this country great. Without the Jews, I don't know what this country would have looked like. And yet, we could have had a lot more of them if we hadn't had the Immigration Act. So none of us know what Donald Trump is going to be like as a president. We just don't know. And for me, there's no reason to hate the man or say he hates America or even say he hates immigrants or say anything about him. I don't know yet. He's been in office one day. And for those who voted for him, like, I don't dislike you. And we could have honest disagreements even about the immigration issue. But like, no, he might do great things for America. I really don't know. I don't think he's the devil, and I don't think he's Pharaoh, right? I really don't. But I think that I don't think we can ignore in the Parsha a statement about, like, I hope he remembers his immigrant roots, and I hope he doesn't invoke rhetoric that forgets that the people who come to this country are often the people who love it the most and build it up the best. And we should know that from our history and from our Rashis.